Consequence Podcast Network.
Welcome to Going There, the crossroads where music and mental health meet. This season of Going There is brought to you by Johnson & Johnson, who believes that health is everything. Their strength in healthcare innovation empowers them to build a world where complex diseases are prevented, treated, and cured, where treatments are smarter and less invasive, and solutions are personal. Through their expertise in innovative medicine and medtech, they are uniquely positioned to innovate across the full spectrum of healthcare solutions today to deliver the breakthroughs of tomorrow and profoundly impact health for humanity. Learn more at www.jnj.com, at Janssen US, and at JNJINNOVMED on Twitter. This season of Going There is also brought to you by AbbVie, who is driving the pursuit of better mental health. Over the last 30 years, AbbVie's scientists and clinicians have worked to tackle the complexity of mental illness, and today offer a portfolio of medicines and a pipeline of innovation that spans depression, anxiety, bipolar 1 disorder, and schizophrenia. To learn more about AbbVie's work to support individuals throughout their mental health journey, please visit www.abbvie.com or follow at AbbVie on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and LinkedIn. Today, we are talking with singer-songwriter, guitarist, and producer Aaron Lee Tasjian. Many of you know Aaron as a founding member of the New York-based bands Semi-Precious Weapons and the Madison Square Gardeners. Aaron eventually went solo with songs like Up All Night and Little Movies. And Aaron has a new album out called Stellar Evolution, which includes the single Horror of It All. Aaron is beginning an American tour next week and then a European tour in October. So check out all of Aaron's music, tour info, and merch at AaronLeeTasjian.com. Now, on the Going There podcast, we have the tough conversations to address important issues so we can learn from each other, challenge the stigma of mental illness, and get the care we need. Now, one issue that we often struggle with on our mental health journey is that when we experience emotional pain, such as intense anxiety, our natural reaction is that we simply want the pain to go away. We want to shut off our mind and escape our bodies so we don't have to experience the horrible symptoms of anxiety, which can often include panic, nonstop worry, catastrophic thoughts, dizziness, and sweating. And so we will often do anything we can to avoid, suppress, or otherwise shut down this anxiety. And this can include unhealthy behaviors such as alcohol or other addictive substances, unhealthy food, or even self-harm. But perhaps what's most consistent across all of these strategies is that we are so concerned with stopping the pain that we are not necessarily interested in understanding or addressing why we are anxious in the first place. And this is totally understandable, especially when our anxiety is so overwhelming that we feel that we just can't function. The problem is that when we avoid or suppress our anxiety, it tends to come back much stronger. So many of us have experienced the feeling of becoming anxious, let's say in a social situation, and then trying to avoid that anxiety only to have it get stronger and turn into a full-blown panic attack. And even though we weren't able to avoid our anxiety this time, we keep trying, and our anxiety becomes worse and worse over time. Part of the reason that we have trouble suppressing our anxiety is something Aaron and I discussed during our conversation, which is that anxiety serves a valuable and powerful function in our lives, which is to protect us, to warn us of possible danger and harm that we may face in the future. When we are anxious, it is crucial that we examine our anxiety, understand why we are anxious, evaluate possible risks in our lives, and develop coping strategies to address those risks, not just do what we can to get rid of the anxiety. Now, to be clear, this is very difficult to do, especially when we are in the throes of intense anxiety like panic. Sometimes we do need help in the moment to reduce our anxiety a bit so that we can be present enough to examine what is happening. And it takes a lot of practice to tolerate our anxiety as we try to assess risks and protect ourselves. But whether at the moment or sometime later, it is crucial to do what Aaron described, which is go through and deal with our anxiety so that we can feel better and still protect ourselves. Now, as we progress through this season of Going There, Our goal is to bring you, the audience, further into the conversation. We'd love to hear your feedback, questions you have that have been sparked by our conversations with these incredible artists, and topics you'd love to see addressed. If you enjoy the show, please leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. These help other folks find their way into the conversation so they can go there with us. So let's go there and listen to what Aaron has to say.
Hi, this is James Mercer from The Shins.
This is Shirley Manson.
This is Lotte Holst, co-founder of The Cure.
This is Huey Lewis giving you the story behind the song.
The Story Behind the Song is back with an exciting second season. We peel back the layers on music's most iconic hits with legendary artists like The Killers, Heart, The B-52s, Violent Femmes, Jewel, Huey Lewis, Modern English, and more. To keep the music flowing, we'll be sprinkling in classic episodes from our archives between each new one. So check out The Story Behind the Song wherever you get your podcast.
Jorge Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Hey, Aaron, welcome to Going There.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So let's start with a song of yours that you feel like best represents your mental health journey.
Ooh, wow, that best represents. There's quite a few that could possibly work. There's a song off of Silver Tears called Out of My Mind. The chorus goes, when I get in my own head, I go out of my mind. And, you know, I think, you know, a big part of my mental health journey has been being able to recognize the times that, you know, my brain kind of goes into what I call story mode, you know, starts telling me all of these wonderful things, quote unquote, about whatever it is that I'm thinking about, you know, and you sort of realize when you really examine, you know, these thoughts that are just coming down the water slide of your brain, it's like, man, that's not true. Or I don't really know that, you know? And so it's, you suddenly recognize the times in your life in which you have been emotionally reacting to a story that your brain is telling you about something that might not even be the case, you know? That realization was like a big one for me, you know, and that song really speaks to that. A second one that comes to mind that could be a very viable candidate too is the song Up All Night. I have experienced a fair amount of challenges sleeping and, you know, a lot of anxiety and things like that. And that song just kind of directly, you know, takes you through, you know, all three of the main things that I seem to worry about: my health, my money, and my love, my romantic life, and my social life. You know, the line in the chorus that I feel like really sums up the way that all of that can feel sometimes is, it's going to be all right, or it won't be.
So let's talk about that, yeah, if it's okay, because anxiety can manifest differently for different people.
Yes.
And really getting in your head, interfering with sleep, those negative thoughts, those are all potentially part of it. How does anxiety manifest for you?
It's a lot of worry. I go into these sort of imagining of worst case scenarios. It's almost like I'll tell myself, if I can think of it first, that lowers the chances of it, of something bad actually happening. And I think all of those are really defense mechanisms. And I've learned when those things start happening, to talk to the anxiety almost like, I know you are trying to protect me right now. I know that your goal is to keep me safe, but I know in this situation that I'm going to be okay because I am, you know, taking this action, you know, or creating some sort of plan to, you know, address the way that I'm feeling. If I feel like the way that I'm feeling is real and what I'm feeling warrants action. So for me, yeah, it's a lot of seeing what's coming, worrying that it's not going to go well, you know, and then also we all have those experiences in our past where we wish things had gone differently. And there's that temptation to overcorrect for that and to try and manifest something different next time that feels better in some way or something. It's interesting thinking about these challenges as a musician or an artist where I'm continually releasing work out into the world, and all of these issues and conditions kind of come back, you know, when you're in that process. You know, it's almost like you get far enough away from record release, you kind of forget about how anxiety inducing it can be sometimes.
I gotta say, I really love the language that you're using around talking to anxiety, because honestly, that's pretty much how I try to tell people who I'm working with, is like, you know, if you're getting anxious thoughts or feelings, to be like, let's start with that validation. Like, hey, I know that I'm going to take you seriously. I know that you are trying to protect me. I know you're a part of me, mm-hmm. right? I know that you matter. And now, once I've done that, I'm going to listen to you and I'm going to address your concern. And that is something that I feel like if people can do, will change their entire relationship with anxiety. Because usually it's an all or nothing thing. Either I don't want to have anything to do with you, like shut up, I don't want to hear you, you're interrupting me, or I'm going to spend all of my time listening to you.
Yeah.
You know, and therefore I'm not, because part of what I think you're saying implicitly about that protective vibe is, listen, I'm listening to you about the part that's protecting us or me. But there's another piece here, which is that I also have to integrate you into all the other areas of my life,
right?
And living my life. So it's like, I want to listen to you, anxiety, but you can't be the only thing that I'm listening to all the time.
Yes.
And that's a very hard balance, I feel like, for people. But I really like the way that you're talking about it, because I feel like you label that concept, you're trying to protect me. I think that's such a big pivot.
Yeah, it was for me. I in a lot of ways had sort of for a period of time fallen under the idea that anxiety was like ruining my experiences, ruining my performance opportunities and things like that. And I probably was one of those people that was like, just go away. Like, God, man, like, leave me alone. I don't want this or whatever, you know? And so finding a way to kind of speak directly to that fear in those moments has definitely changed things for me. I mean, I can't say it's like, oh, it's all, you know, yeah, that was just the magic wand fix or whatever, and now it's all perfect or anything like that. Like, all of these acts of mindfulness, of awareness, and all that, those kind of things are works, you know, in progress that I will continue to work on probably for the rest of my life. But knowing that and just being able to recognize even what's happening in the moment and feel like I have some sort of autonomy over at least conceptually what's going on within me when I'm experiencing anxiety in those ways has definitely helped in so far as like, yeah, it's not this like unknowable thing that I just have no idea what to do or say when it happens to me, you know? So I would say that's been a major benefit for me.
Just on that, the thing that you just said, because you had a quote of a soft place in my heart for people trying to figure out who they are.
Yeah.
That which, and I kind of feel like the way that second part of how you described the anxiety management process, right? So there's that first part of saying like, listen, you're trying to protect me. I value you. We're gonna talk this out. And then that second piece of being like, and by the way, like, I'm under no pressure. We're under no pressure to say we've figured it all out. Right. Our relationship may change. Like, the anxiety may get stronger. It may get weaker. It may seem more helpful. It may seem less helpful. But I think for a lot of people, especially when they begin their mental health journey, there is always this pressure to get there, to get over things, to get past things, to resolve things. And it's a language, quite frankly, that's almost nonsensical, mm-hmm. considering like every single area of your life. It's like, hey, I guess you've resolved yourself as a musician, or you resolved how to write the best song, or you resolved how to play guitar. It's sort of like, that doesn't mean anything. It's like, that's a forever thing. And it's sort of like, I have no idea why in health in general, mental health in particular, we have this language of stopping, because it puts so much pressure on people to figure things out that, like you said, protection's ongoing.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just such a, I think the way that you describe it as this ongoing process, people figuring themselves out, that very much resonates for me.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I think this relates to what you were just saying, but there was a time in the past few years, you know, where I was just going through a really tough time. I was trying really hard to restructure my business team and just finding it really challenging to do, and finding it challenging to find a home for the music that I had made and all these things. And I was really just going through a really tough time. And I remember my mom calling me and saying, I got to be honest, I'm really worried about you in this. And it would make me feel better as your mom to see you taking some actionable steps to change your perspective on this and have a different attitude, because I'm worried you just seem really sad and stuff. And I said to my mom at that moment, even, I hear what you're saying and I'm grateful for your concern for me, but I really feel like this is one of those things that I can't go around or over or under. I just have to go through this. And that means that, yes, I am going to experience this in a way that, you know, is going to bring some heavy feelings for me and have, you know, some trigger points and all of those things. And I would just ask, as my mom, that you just see that this is something that I'm going through, and that the emotions that I'm having around that are actually just a very natural reaction to what I'm going through and dealing with. And I think as time goes on, you'll see that that will change. But right now, that's just where things are for me in this particular moment, you know, and that seemed to bring a lot of relief to her when I told her that.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, the concept of how you spoke to your mom almost feels like such a great analog of how one can speak to themselves also with their anxiety, like that kind of mother concern,
yeah.
You know,
I never thought of that. That's a really good point.
And, you know, it's that idea that, hey, I hear you, I get it. But listen, and let me explain why we need to do this, because one of the things that I feel like is very tough for people to grasp is that, I mean, what are we talking about here? You're restructuring your business team. You're looking for a place for your music to land. These are all growth things. You know, it's very tough, I think, for a lot of people to reconcile the fact that a lot of times their most intense negative emotions come when they are doing something that ultimately is going to be really good for them, you know. And it's so tempting to sort of be like, no, just stay in that safe place. But that's a big conversation with the anxiety. It's like, look, I want to be protected, but protecting me too much is going to mean like there's a different kind of pain at the end of that. Because what's the solution? Like, I don't try to restructure my business team. I don't try to find a home for my music. Like, where does that go?
Right.
And I think it's so hard, because I wish people would realize, like, hey, when you're about to do something really tough, that's good. There's going to be a lot of stuff that does not feel good.
Yes.
But it's okay, like you're saying.
Yeah. I think that, what's the term, growing pains or whatever, you know, that's a very real thing. And in any time we're going to enact change or find ways to just sort of deal with the inevitability of change within our lives, we're going to face all of those hard feelings that one goes through when change is happening. Yeah.
And tell me if I don't know if this is something you said or something I just interpreted, but But the idea of reinventing or evolving the different sides of yourself. Mm-hmm. And that I feel like when I wrote it down, I didn't put it in quotes, but I don't remember if it was something you said or something I just thought as I was. Is that something that you have talked about?
Yes, I have. It's more in relation to kind of the artist piece of maybe 19 or 18 years old. Martin Scorsese made that documentary about Bob Dylan, No Direction Home or whatever it was. And there's a point it's kind of early on in the movie, but Bob Dylan's just talking about just being an artist. And at one point he says, as an artist, you're really only ever in danger if you feel like you've arrived at something. That made me think about, you know, certainly in terms of my songwriting and all that, the idea that I'm just constantly in this state of becoming, and every new song, every new record, every new guitar riff, whatever it is, you know, is a part of that process of me becoming something else, someone else. And to deny that process is to deny my own, you know, accessibility to artistic growth. So, you know, I really have used that not only in my art, but then also now as a person, like on my mental health journey, to try and remember, like, you know, I'm not going to be the same person that I was 10 days ago.
Yeah, I think I was just struck by, and we talked beforehand about, you know, you start a band like Semi Precious Weapons. They're doing things like, and you're a young guy. I mean, you're a young guy now, but you're a really young guy back then. To have the capability of being like, listen, there's something else that I want to do, right? Because that started with presumably, hey, there's something else I want to do. This band did not exist. I want to start this band. And I think that what happens sometimes for people is that when they see something, they only see the product. So they don't necessarily realize that, like, hey, great band, but that band was a product of Aaron saying, you know, hey, I want to do something different. I want to evolve in this way. And if that evolution then continues someplace else, that's part of that. It's not like, oh, I'm doing something different. It's like, yes, you're doing something different than that project at that moment, but the process has been the same from the beginning, you know? And that to me, I think that's where I now in retrospect, I got that. I was like, wow, that's a very heady thing to do for somebody at that age who was having success, you know, in that way.
Everyone said I was nuts. You know? Like people would call me up and be like, I just, you know, saw Lady Gaga like in an arena and your band was opening for her and they were playing the songs that you helped write, but you weren't there. What are you doing? You know, and I'd be like, well, I'm playing bar gigs. They would be like,
well, it's like I'm doing the same thing that got me to write those songs. Yes. Like I'm actually like what you're seeing is just you're like, and that's the thing that's sort of weird about artists and fans. It's like we're seeing the end product, but we don't see the process. So when someone calls you and says, hey, your songs are being played at Madison Square Garden, what's going on? It's like, well, the same exact thing that was going on that got me to write those songs. You just weren't there for any of them.
Exactly. Yeah. It's funny. You kind of return in a lot of ways, like, for me, you return to those very simple things like that, because when life feels more chaotic, those very simple act of I'm going to get up today and I'm going to sit with my guitar and I'm going to see what's inside of it and I'm going to write it down no matter what it is, you know, it's such a simple thing. But like doing exercise or any of those kind of things that rewire neural pathways in your brain, it's one of those. And so you do it for an hour and your whole inner world is kind of like all like bubbling and like and energized in a way that it wasn't before.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I'm not sure if this what I'm about to say matches up. But, you know, as somebody my age, anyone who does anything with the New York Dolls is sort of like, okay, like that's just, you know, like such a credibility stamp that it's hard to overlook. It's like, but in retrospect, and I've not followed David Johansen's career all that carefully, so I don't know the circumstances about going from the Dolls to Buster Poindexter, but I actually came upon him as Buster Poindexter first, just because of my age, like growing up in the 80s, where I was like, and I just was like, oh, who's this person? And then I look back and I was like, oh, wait a minute, this person, you know, where I was, to be honest, I was like too young to kind of be there for it. But it's like, and to some degree, I wonder if he went through almost like a similar thing where you look at Buster Poindexter, you look at the New York Dolls, you think to yourself, is this similar, but, or is this again, just sort of this person who's artistic, who did this completely inventive and incendiary thing to start. And then just is like, yeah. And as part of my process, I completely reinvented myself into this other thing that you may not be able as a fan put together, but that's all part of me. And that I don't know, for some reason now, the fact that you work with the Dolls, I'm kind of feeling like there's a symmetry there that is making sense to me, although I haven't fully figured it out, so I apologize.
No, but it is the essence of humanity in a lot of ways. I think that people, that there's more to people than we are even sometimes comfortable admitting to ourselves. I mean, David is so remarkable. Like, I can just tell you, you know, like, he knows so much about so much. It's wild. And I'll never forget being in Rosario, Argentina with the Dolls, and we're playing this place, the Willie Dixon Blues Club, and every square inch of the dressing room walls are covered in black and white photographs of old blues singers. And David Johansen knew every single one of them, man. He knew all of them. He knew what their hit songs were. He knew what labels they were on. He knew who was in their band, I mean, he is a really, really bright guy. And I think one of the reasons that he's been able to, you know, sort of be interesting to us in all of these different ways is because he does a fantastic job of maintaining his curiosity, whether it's about himself or his art or, you know, whatever it is he's thinking about. He doesn't strike me as the kind of guy who, is just like, yeah, I'm just a Colgate toothpaste guy, and that's the only one I'll ever use because I have some arbitrary reason for it or whatever. You know, there's like a lot of thought and intention behind everything that he does. So I think that's really the trick, is to try and maintain that curiosity, that childlike state of wonderment, because then it leaves you open to get swept up in the magic of what you're doing and not feel silly or self-conscious about it. A lot of times I really think to myself, like, beyond being an example of a person, you know, making art on their own terms, who also happens to be queer and things like that, the real thing that I can give, the real thing that I can be an example of, is someone who knows the joy and the satisfaction of getting lost in your work.
And it's interesting that you brought that up, because what you were talking about, the lyric, "My heart is wild, but it's true. It loves anyone it tells me to." That, as a personal and as a professional mission statement, you know what I mean? Like, it just, to me, that was so powerful, you know, as a concept. And this gets back to the stuff we were talking about with anxiety. It's like, how afraid are we of what other people would consider wild?
Yeah.
Or other people would consider crazy?
Yeah.
Or abnormal, or any version of that?
Yeah.
And it's just this idea of like, look, you know, that the juxtaposition of, it's wild, but it's true. And it's just like, I love that, because I felt like it grounded. It's like, you're saying wild, like it's all over the place. It's like, man, that is solid on the ground for me. and it's almost, I just felt like it was a thesis almost, just for people to be able to just kind of say, like, it even gets back into the concept of the conversation with the anxiety. It's like, yeah, you might feel like there's something that's all over the place. Just ground yourself in what you feel like is true. And I do love that concept. It loves anyone it tells me to. That openness is so powerful.
Yeah.
Creativity, mental health, personal relationships, whatever it may be. I felt like that was a very powerful statement.
Yeah, I think it's a doorway, you know, that openness. It's a doorway to accessing the, you know, parts of our higher self, the parts that you can't get to when you're angry, resentful, in those sort of lower vibrational frequency parts of who we are. And you have to go there sometimes, you know, and that is just a part of being a human being. But I think being able to maintain that openness, you know, is going to give us access to those higher frequencies that we want to vibrate on. And like, and maybe even at a time and a place where, you know, without that kind of awareness, it might be difficult to get there otherwise. You know, it can really be a lifeline, you know, in a lot of different kinds of situations. So I try really hard as much as I can. And it's not easy to maintain that openness.
No, can I tell you, just because I've never been able to talk about it, or I doubt I'll have that many opportunities to talk about it, but I read that you were into thrifting.
Yes.
And can I tell you, I feel, and again, this is not something I've particularly
looking at it, baby.
I feel like honestly, our family, like, we love thrift, especially my kids. Like, we love it. Like, it's like, and I've always tried to figure out, why do I love this so much? Like, why do I love this so much more than going into a store? And in theory, look, it might be financially, like, I don't have the money to just go in whatever I want. But it's like, but there is something about that openness, like, you're going in and it's like, you have no idea what you're going to find.
Yes.
And you kind of know that you might not find anything,
yes,
but you're willing in there. And then when you do find that thing, I don't know, there's something about thrifting. And I just, when I read that you were into that, I was like, okay, we gotta fit thrifting in a little bit, because I don't know when I'm gonna get a chance to talk about it again. But I feel like there's something about that process that is so powerful, because I always feel good thinking about it, going towards it, being in it, and it doesn't matter if I don't find anything.
Right.
I still leave feeling like, that was awesome. And I'm not 1,000% sure why,
yeah,
but I thought you might
know.
It's
like, well... What do I know? Nothing. I feel like thrifting is kind of a special thing for those people who are willing to look more than they buy. You know, it's about searching, without a specific, as you said, without like, okay, I gotta buy black socks, so I'm gonna go to, you know, wherever, you know, and get a pair of black socks or whatever. It's not that kind of thing. It's like, you know, I mean, just even, I'm sure you probably relate to this. I mean, I, you know, one of the first things I think of when I think about thrifting is like the smell of the places. You know, it's just, they're lived in. There's this very like earthy kind of, you know, aroma to the whole thing, that it just kind of adds to the sense of like, there are many lives that have existed in this jacket before me. And in this case specifically, I mean, here's how crazy and intentional I get with this kind of stuff. So this jacket is a thrift store find. I don't know if you can see the tag there. It's an old Versace jacket, and, you know, probably just something somebody didn't know what they had or whatever. You know, I think I paid like $7 for this or something like that. You know, I mean, it was really, and when it was new, it was probably $700, honestly. So I had written a song on this latest record called Ocean Drive. And the inspiration for the title Ocean Drive came from a house that Gianni Versace used to live in Miami, Florida. Now, he had obviously had homes all over the world, but he and his partner felt that this property specifically was the place where they felt at home. And I know, as a queer person, having a place where you can call home that you feel good about is a huge deal. And so I just thought, like, oh, wow, cool. What a great concept for a song. You know, we can all relate to the concept of home, but I think particularly for those of us who, you know, are queer folks or whatever, we know what it means to have that safe space. And so I wanted to write a song about that. So I wrote the song, and, you know, and I was really excited about it. I sent it to my sister, who's a fashion writer for the New York Post, and she loved it and felt that there was really something to it. And that was really inspiring. And then I was like, a couple of days later, I was like, I think this is a good time for a thrift trip. You know, I'm going to go out there and see like what's going on. And second store I went to, I found this Gianni Versace jacket that fit me perfectly. And it was just almost like I had manifested it or something. I know that, you know, whatever is true or not true objectively, you know, but it really felt like it was meant for me to live a life in this, at some of my life anyway, in this jacket. And so I bought it with that intention. And now every time I put it on, I feel good.
Yeah. Can I tell you that idea of home, how powerful it is when that is threatened in any kind of way? You know, if we have something about ourselves, whether our sexuality or mental health, or, you know, feel like we're not going to live up to some kind of expectations, and we're afraid that that is somehow going to be taken away or compromised, even in a small way.
Yeah.
You know, because your home doesn't have to be taken away in order for it to be compromised severely.
Truly.
You know, just sort of like knowing, like, hey, I know something about myself that I'm worried that if the people around me knew, they somehow wouldn't feel the same way towards me. Even if that turns out to be not true, that is terrifying.
Yes.
And now that you're talking about it, I'm wondering if part of what's so great about thrifting, because you said it, it's like, you know, we live in a place in theory, but our home is our clothes oftentimes. Like, you know, we're walking around in our clothes, and the ability to go someplace and say, I'm going to craft my home. And especially based on the idea that, like, and I don't even know what that's going to look like. It's like, you didn't say, oh, where's this Versace jacket? It's just the idea that you go someplace and be like, yes, that's home for me.
Yeah.
Like, yes, that t-shirt that someone else didn't realize was important to them, right? It's like, that matters to me. It's like, I mean, what a way to, like, sort of like build an identity, a home, if you will, you know, in that context.
Well, I think
that is.
Yeah. I just to add to what you're saying there, you know, I think we also, you know, are very aware of, you know, environmental issues that we face. I think, unfortunately, you know, there are certain parts of the fashion industry that contribute to that in a big way. You know, I think about, you know, the fact that there is a mountain of discarded clothing in the Atacama Desert that's so big that astronauts can see it from space. You know, so to me, like, thrifting also sort of reinforces the idea that, something that's been crafted, designed, you know, created, it maybe isn't as disposable as we want to feel like it is. And really, we need to learn to be stewards of or guardians of these things in our lives, much the way that, you know, was sort of more, you know, traditionally done, you know, by native people, where things would be passed down, or, you know, they had, you know, sort of this value of being lived in meant that it was more valuable, you know, and something like thrifting, you know, whether it's, you know, everyone else's, like, intention for it or not, like, I connect with the act of doing it in that specific way too, where it's like, I'm trying to be a guardian of, like, I don't want this stuff to just end up in a giant trash pile somewhere, you know, like.
It's so funny because I feel as though, and I'm sure you experience this, like, where you go into clubs. And so you, like, you know, in the past you go into someplace like CBGBs, yeah, and it's like, okay, why does this feel so much more authentic than some clubs where it's sort of like, well, we're intentionally trying to create a vibe.
Yes.
And you can't necessarily, like, you know, intellectually, okay, things actually happened here.
Yes.
Right. And it's like, okay, so you know that intellectually, but it's not that. There's a feeling, and it's like, you can feel the energy. You could feel whether, you know, whatever bands were playing there. I was about to say the Dolls, but I don't know if the Dolls ever played CBGB, so my apologies for that. But, like, you know, like a Max's Kids, like you can feel the energy, and we kind of understand that with buildings,
yeah,
or an old house, right? Like the character of a house, we understand that. But you're right, I don't know that we fully grasp it with clothes, but we should.
Yeah.
Like, to some degree, like the sense of, like, there's somehow, and I don't even know what it is biologically or chemically or whatever, but there's some kind of sense of depth that has built out of this jacket that has been passed between like five different people. It was intended for one thing. I don't know. There's something about it where it's like just the ongoing, like seeing value in things.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, like something to that effect.
Definitely. Definitely.
All right. So let's say that we've begun the process of solving why thrifting is so important for mental health. That's good.
We started
the conversation, but there's obviously more on that. But we have come to the time in the show, if you will, where, okay, you have the songs that you have done that represent your mental health journey. But one of the ways that, you know, here we are, we're talking about all this stuff in part as it relates to music, because music is one of the first places that people begin to explore how they feel, who they are, what they need, you know, even before they can articulate.
Right.
Right. Even like we're talking about thrifting, it's like, I don't know why this jacket feels so important to me, but it does. I think with music, you know, talking about like the Willie Dixon blues music, it's like there are just songs for many people are the beginning of the mental health journey. And sometimes the only part of the mental health journey, you know, for better or worse. Which artists, albums, songs have been important for you? Not the ones that you've written, but other people have written, either that kind of opened you up to something or you used to go to during tough times, anything in that realm.
Yeah. Jeff Tweedy. What's the song off of Yankee Hotel Foxtrot where the lyric goes, distance has no way of making love understandable. I can't remember the name of the song for whatever reason at this moment, but that song, I remember, like, I was a very young person. I was trying to figure out a lot of things for myself at once. I had been in a relationship with a person that I felt very committed to, and that ended sort of on their terms. And that was really hard. At the same time, I had gotten this scholarship to go to the Berklee College of Music for jazz guitar performance, but I was really feeling pulled to be a songwriter. And I didn't know how. My parents really were excited about the college thing, you know, and the scholarship and all that. And in a way, choosing something that felt more connected for me almost felt like I would be disappointing them in a way. You know, it was like I was wrestling with like a lot of that kind of stuff at that time. I mean, that whole album, really, Yankee Hotel Foxtrot, was something that I listened to over and over again in that period, which lasted for, you know, it was probably about a year and a half before I really felt like I had moved on from all that stuff. You know, Rufus Wainwright has been a big one for me. The album Poses in particular, songs like Cigarette and Chocolate Milk, certainly. Just hearing that as a 19-year-old kid, like, I was like, wow, there's a lot to think about. Even the title track, the song Poses, that second verse of that song, where he's talking about, you know, how did I go from wanting to be someone, now I'm drunk and wearing flip-flops on Fifth Avenue, you know, just the sort of like moment-to-moment journey that you're always on with your mental health. And I felt like those songs were really capturing the topsy-turviness of how unsettled I was feeling in that period of my life. So I honestly can say, you know, because I did do therapy and I did do, you know, a brief amount of like medication and stuff like that at that time. But the things that helped me the most were being able to see myself in someone else going through something similar. And those kind of artists and those kind of songs were absolutely that for me, and probably even more.
Well, Aaron, listen, thank you so much for coming on the show. It is, or the podcast, I don't know what we call it. podcast. Thank you for coming on the podcast. Yeah. Honestly, it's been so great talking with you. It's been great to see all your success, and I look forward to it continuing. I hope we get a chance to talk again.
As do I. It was such a wonderful conversation, and thanks for having me on, and thank you so much for doing this. It really means a lot to me when folks are reaching out to people and encouraging them to continue their own journey with all this stuff. So thank you for being who you are and doing what you do. It's an important thing, and it warms my heart to see it.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
So there it is. Aaron Lee Tazjian and I talking about his struggle with anxiety and how he uses anxiety as a form of protection rather than just something to avoid and suppress. Now, there's so much we can take away from the conversation with Aaron, but one concept I wanted to focus on was something Aaron brought up later in the conversation when he and I were discussing our mutual love of thrifting. He talked about the importance of finding a place you can call home, a place where we feel comfortable. And this is such an important part of our mental health journey. What are the people, places, and things that make us feel more like ourselves, more safe, more comfortable, more welcomed? Not only does this give us somewhere to go and something to do during difficult times, it reminds us that there is hope, that we can feel okay, or even good in our lives. And when we are gripped by panic, hopelessness, or despair, sometimes it's these experiences that allow us to keep going. But one thing I wanted to build upon from Aaron's experience is that finding a place you can call home often starts with how we treat ourselves. By being more accepting of and finding value in his anxiety, Aaron was making his own experience a more welcoming and safe place. And he describes in his songwriting how he accepts and even aspires to be in what he described as a constant state of becoming that allows him to hear his inner dialogue, even his anxious thoughts, as an ongoing evolution that is valuable rather than something to avoid or suppress. And as we try to make a home for ourselves in our own emotional life, we can ask ourselves, are we being kind to ourselves? Are we embracing our experience rather than being afraid of or criticizing ourselves? Are we listening to our fears and anxieties rather than trying to shut ourselves down? Do we do nice things for ourselves? Do we seek out people, places, and things that make us feel good and protect ourselves from toxic situations? And if we commit to this process on our mental health journey, we are more likely to feel at home with ourselves as well as find home in the rest of our life. I want to thank Aaron for this wonderful conversation. This season of Going There is brought to you by Johnson & Johnson, who believes that health is everything. Their strength in healthcare innovation empowers them to build a world where complex diseases are prevented, treated, and cured, where treatments are smarter and less invasive, and solutions are personal. Through their expertise in innovative medicine and medtech, they are uniquely positioned to innovate across the full spectrum of healthcare solutions today to deliver the breakthroughs of tomorrow and profoundly impact health for humanity. Learn more at www.jnj.com, at Janssen US, and at JNJINNOVMed on Twitter. This season of Going There is also brought to you by AbbVie, who is driving the pursuit of better mental health. Over the last 30 years, AbbVie's scientists and clinicians have worked to tackle the complexity of mental illness, and today offer a portfolio of medicines and a pipeline of innovation that spans depression, anxiety, bipolar 1 disorder, and schizophrenia. And I, of course, want to thank Consequence Podcast Network and Sound Mind Live for including me in this wonderful project. And thanks to Pete Wilson and the Rooks for letting us use their song, I Know. If you are struggling with anxiety, depression, or addiction and are looking for help, please call the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration National Helpline at 1-800-622-4357. If you're thinking about harming yourself and want to seek help, please contact the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline at 988. You may also go to the Sound Mind Live and Consequence websites for more information. So be healthy, be safe, and be kind to yourself and others. See you next time at the Crossroads.
Hi, this is James Mercer from The Shins.
This is Shirley Manson.
This is Lo Tullhurst, co-founder of The Cure.
This is Huey Lewis giving you the story behind the song.
The Story Behind the Song is back with an exciting second season. We peel back the layers on music's most iconic hits with legendary artists like The Killers, Heart, The B-52s, Violent Femmes, Jewel, Huey Lewis, Modern English, and more. To keep the music flowing, we'll be sprinkling in classic episodes from our archives between each new one. So check out The Story Behind the Song wherever you get your podcast.
Hey, I'm Nancy Wilson.
Mike Campbell. Mark Mothersbaugh from Devo.
Hey, it's Adam from Counting Crows, and I am here giving you the story behind the song.
The Story Behind the Song is back for season 4. I'm Peter Chidi of Deep Cuts Media, and this season we're diving even deeper into some of music history's most iconic tracks with the legends who made them.
What's so beautiful about it is a lot of people connect with, you gotta live your life and don't let the big man push you down. Don't have to live like a refugee, can't keep fighting for what you believe. And that was Tom.
From the spark of inspiration to untold tales from the studio, we unlock the true stories that shape the music you love.
At the time on the radio, there was a really cool riff by Nazareth covering a Joni Mitchell song, This Flight Tonight. It had the same groove, but I think Barracuda kind of blew it out of the water.
Join us as we all sit down with music icons like Devo, Heart, Mike Campbell of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, Sublime, Counting Crows, and so many more. New episodes are out now from the Consequence Podcast Network, so tune in wherever you get your podcasts and join me for the story behind the song.